This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's just at that stage when they were firing above our heads. The president did want them to say, if you're going to fire, we'll take it as a declaration of war.
That's South African Defense Minister Angie Motshekga on President Cyril Ramaphosa's claim that Rwanda Defense Force militia were responsible for the deaths of 13 South African soldiers in the Eastern DRC. Details coming up. Also, Uganda's health ministry today confirmed an Ebola outbreak in the capital, Kampala, and we're covering a discussion on how to deal with expected changes in U.S. policy on Africa. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Diplomatic tensions are rising in African capitals as efforts to end the fighting in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo continues. The East African Community, the Southern African Development Community, the United Nations, France, and the United States have all called for a ceasefire. However, the M23 rebels who captured the eastern DRC city of Goma say they are moving on to other areas, including towards the capital, Kinshasa. Yesterday, DRC President Felix Tshisekedi condemned what he called the international community's inaction in the face of intensifying conflict in the east, warning of the risk of regional escalation of the conflict. He said his forces are mounting a strong response to the M23 advance, and he again accused Rwanda of backing the M23 and sending its troops into the DRC.
Votre silence et votre inaction face à la barbarie du régime de Kigali.
Tshisekedi says the silence and inaction in the face of the Kigali government's barbarity and atrocities by its henchmen are not only an affront to the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo, but also to the universal values of justice and peace. Rwanda has never directly said it backs the M23, despite reports that it does from the DRC, South Africa, the United Nations, and rights groups. Kigali officials in turn say the DRC backs the Democratic Forces of the Liberation of Rwanda, or FDLR, which aims to overthrow Rwanda's government. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says the DRC is responsible for the conflict because it has refused to negotiate with the M23. As we just reported, the capture of most of Goma, the largest city in the eastern DRC by M23 rebels, has rattled the continent, with regional blocs in eastern and southern Africa calling emergency summits and the UN, United States, China, and the European Union urging an end to the fighting. Just a short time ago, M23 gave a news conference in Goma. I talked with reporter Sabiti Jafar Alkatanti, who was there.
It was in the Serena Hotel. And during this press conference, the coordinator of AFC, which is Alliance Fleuve Congo, Corneille Nanga said, they came as Congolese to occupy a zone of Congo in order for them to chase out the power of Kinshasa, because Mr. Felix Tshisekedi, the president of DRC, is not a good leader. He's not a leader who has a good leadership. He was not being elected. He is not a true man, and he is still lying for Congolese people. Citizens in DRC have bad condition of life, and Tshisekedi is getting rich, his and his family. That's why AFC joined M23 to create this alliance in order to go till Kinshasa.
So their plan is not only Goma, but they want to advance to Kinshasa?
That's what he said. And he said they will overcome because they have the support of people. And for now, they also have a lot of equipment and soldiers. And talking about soldiers, I will let you know that today in Goma Stadium, 2,400 FRDC soldiers who surrendered to M23, left Goma, going to instruction center in Rutshuru, where they will be trained to become M23 soldiers.
Who were the attendees at the press conference? How did they go about inviting the press?
M23 communication team succeeded to talk to some farmers journalists, and those journalists told other journalists about this press conference. And the press conference was called for yesterday, but it didn't take place yesterday. It takes place today. And another news, I visited the morgue of Goma today, and I met hundreds of bodies. The local Red Cross with the International Red Cross are working together in finding bodies from neighborhoods, from streets of Goma, and bring them to the morgue of Goma. Hundreds of bodies have already discovered, and they are stored at the morgue of Goma waiting for their burial.
They are waiting for their relatives or loved ones to claim their bodies?
I don't know how M23 will organize the burial of these people, because some of the bodies are soldiers coming from other provinces, other cities, other villages, and some of them are citizens of Goma, and almost of bodies are now at a stage of decomposition, because you know it's now around 5 days, so they are not in good conditions. They are not even in coffins, but in some plastic box.
That was VOA Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti. He talked to me from Goma. Rwandan President Paul Kagame has lashed out at South African counterpart Cyril Ramaphosa after Ramaphosa accused Rwanda of backing the M23 rebels behind the escalating crisis in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo this week. As Kate Bartlett reports, Kagame has accused Ramaphosa of lying and warned of possible confrontation.
South Africa has troops deployed in the war-torn Democratic Republic of Congo as part of a UN peacekeeping mission there, as well as in a separate deployment by the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, aimed at backing up Congolese forces fighting rebels. But Pretoria is under pressure this week after 13 South African soldiers were killed in a recent surge in fighting that resulted in the M23 militia, which Rwanda is widely accused of backing, making a rapid advance and seizing partial control of the key city of Goma in North Kivu province on Sunday night. Ramaphosa said in a written statement on Wednesday that the M23 and what he called a Rwandan Defense Force militia were responsible for the casualties, while his Minister of Defense, Angie Motshekga, went one step further.
It's just that at that stage when they were firing above our heads, the president did warn them to say, if you are going to fire, we'll take it as a declaration of war.
The remarks by Ramaphosa and Motshekga have caused a diplomatic spat with Kigali. Kagame verbally hit back in an angry statement posted to social media on Wednesday night, saying the Rwandan Defense Force was not a militia, and quote, if South Africa prefers confrontation, Rwanda will deal with the matter in that context any day. He also disputed Ramaphosa's statement that the dead South African soldiers were peacekeepers, saying the SADC force was engaged in offensive combat operations.
I spoke with the president of South Africa, who sought me out to speak with me on this matter because of their involvement in Eastern Congo. And he's also there pretending to be playing a peacemaker role. M23 are not Rwandans, please. And South Africa dares even issue threats.
South African Minister of International Relations, Ronald Lamola, has directly blamed Rwanda for backing the M23, saying reports by UN experts proved Kigali's involvement. He said on Wednesday that South Africa had taken part in an African Union meeting on the crisis.
As South Africa, we participated in that platform and put our position across, which is a ceasefire, the immediate cessation of hostilities, and also to request all the forces that are supporting M23 to also cease the support immediately.
Mineral-rich Eastern Congo, which borders Rwanda, has been plagued by conflict for more than 3 decades. The current fighting stems partly from the 1994 Rwanda genocide. The perpetrators fled across the border to North Kivu, and Rwanda says they now represent a security threat to its territory. The Congolese government has accused Kigali of being active in eastern Congo, saying Kigali is after the area's vast mineral wealth. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Here in Washington, crews are working to recover the remains of those who died when a passenger jet collided with a U.S. Army helicopter late last night. The American Airlines jet crashed into the Potomac River near the Ronald Reagan National Airport and broke apart. Authorities say the 60 passengers and four crew members on the jet and the three soldiers in the helicopter are believed to have died. This is the deadliest U.S. air crash in more than 20 years. My colleagues Carol Van Dam and Ignatius Anor are out near the search area, which is only about 5 kilometers from the White House. Carol is on the line. What is happening at the site of the crash on the Potomac River, Carol?
Hi, yes. Well, we're here and we're seeing at least three or four boats that are still going through the water very slowly around where we're standing, just on the Virginia side of the Potomac River. It's just a short distance from the Washington Reagan National Airport. And just a few minutes ago, about 5 minutes ago, they opened the airport, and now planes are flying again. They are flying right over our head just a couple minutes ago, and it was shuttered for all these emergency services that were in the water. And as you know, they earlier today switched from a search effort to a recovery effort of just the debris and the body.
Yes, Carol. So what are authorities saying about the conditions at the time of the collision, and are there any clues yet as to what might have gone wrong?
They say it was not unusual. It was not abnormal. It was about 50 degrees. It was a bit windy. There's 16-mile-per-hour winds. It was cold because we had a terrible cold spat of weather here, so the water was very, very cold. And they just really don't know yet what has caused this accident. The transportation secretary has said that it was both the airplane and the helicopter were on the standard path that they were supposed to be on. The helicopter was on a training mission. It was a yearly training mission that they go on, but it was on its standard path, according to the transportation secretary, and the plane was on its approach just a few minutes from arriving at National Airport from Wichita, Kansas, when this happened.
Can you tell us more about who was on board the plane and the helicopter?
This was a plane that was a smaller regional jet that was operated by American Airlines. And it was a plane that was coming from Kansas because this was championship U.S. ice skaters that were at a development park camp in Wichita. And that's also where it was in conjunction with the U.S. championship ice skating, event. And there were also two rather famous Russian ice skaters, former Russian ice skaters that were on this plane. And as you said, there are expected to be no survivors.
Carol Van Dam, thank you for your input.
Sure thing.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. And newly elected U.S. President Donald Trump has promised to boldly reshape the country's relationship with Africa, from trade agreements to aid assistance. Officials' U.S. positions are likely to take a different approach to secure national interests. VOA's Anthony Labruto is live at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace in Washington, D.C., where American and African experts are meeting to discuss how to best approach the expected changes in U.S. policy. Welcome to African News Tonight, Anthony.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
So what's currently happening at the Carnegie Endowment event?
So experts and analysts are here in downtown Washington, D.C., at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. The main focus is a compendium, as they're calling it, which is titled Priorities for the New U.S. Administration and Congress on Strengthening Economic Relations in Africa. And so this booklet here, this assessment, is really big takeaways of a variety of U.S. foreign policy initiatives toward Africa.
So how are the analysts, experts looking to address U.S. foreign policy towards Africa?
Absolutely. So really 12 key points in this compendium that really deal from trade agreements to direct foreign investment, diplomatic engagements, a variety of things. Certainly, we've reported a lot of the big things here. for U.S. involvement in Africa. But one of the big things that the compendium is really suggesting is that U.S. re-engage with Western Africa. So particularly, we, you know, we remember the troop withdrawals from Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso. But there are also their highlights are really elections in Benin, Cote d'Ivoire coming up, ECOWAS really as a regional bloc, as a regional stability anchor in the region. There are a lot of room for opportunity for the United States to come in and really be a guiding force in bringing back really their interests back into the region. Another big point, too, is energy and minerals. You know, the demand for resources for the U.S. and Africa is growing exponentially. So how can African countries better utilize the resources they have? What can the United States do to help them? Certainly, the U.S. is one of the biggest foreign investors for mining critical minerals in particular, and they certainly don't want that to stop either. And so what are some of the concerns? What are some of the concerns they could do to keep a lot of these things, a lot of these trade agreements continuing?
And lastly, Anthony, what are some issues that African leaders have going into the new Trump administration?
So the big theme from really the African perspective is increased engagement. Now, this assessment paints a very favorable picture toward further U.S. engagement. It really is seen as the best investor, really from as a holistic view of the African people. But more importantly, it's seen the way that it invests, or really the process of how aid is given, how money is spent, how money is invested, is really seen incredibly, incredibly favorably compared to other foreign investors like China, like Russia, like even Britain and Europe. Building partnerships, building development, a really a two-way relationship where African nations are seen as partners as opposed to more of just aid recipients. Really main takeaways here, though, Gaheas, from this panel, African leaders want more U.S. investment, more U.S. engagement, re-upping a lot of these trade agreements like AGOA, but really in the immediate short term, a lot more diplomatic engagement and really seeing a little bit more of the willingness to have an open dialogue.
VOA's Anthony Labruto live at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace in Washington, D.C., where American and African experts are meeting to discuss how to best approach the expected changes in U.S. policy. Anthony, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much, Yes.
Uganda's health ministry today confirmed an Ebola outbreak in the capital, Kampala, with the first confirmed patient dying yesterday. The patient, a 32-year-old male nurse at the Mulago Referral Hospital, initially sought treatment at various facilities, including Mulago, after developing fever-like symptoms, then developed multi-organ failure. Post-mortem samples confirmed the Sudan Ebola virus disease strain. The highly infectious hemorrhagic fever is transmitted through contact with infected bodily fluids and tissues. Symptoms include headache, vomiting, blood, muscle pains, and bleeding. Uganda's last outbreak left 55 dead and was declared over in January 2023 after the government struggled for nearly 4 months to contain the infection. President Donald Trump is widely expected to impose tariffs on goods from Mexico and Canada as early as February 1st as part of a plan he says will boost the U.S. economy. But with much about the specifics still unknown, economists, business owners, and everyday consumers are still trying to understand how it could impact them. Johnny Fernandez reports from New York City.
President Donald Trump says the U.S. is being treated unfairly by its international partners, and he is ready to use the full force of the nation's economic power to change that.
Tariffs will make our country rich.
The president threatened hefty levies against any nation that refuses his demands, whether they be combating illegal immigration and drug trafficking or decreasing U.S. trade imbalances. Economists have mixed feelings about how tariffs could impact the U.S. economy and consumers. James Galbraith is an American economist and a professor of government at the University of Texas at Austin.
A tariff strategy can be implemented in such a way that the cost largely falls outside the country.
Economist James Galbraith says Trump's tariffs could help bring back jobs to U.S. industries. By making foreign goods more expensive, the goal is to reduce reliance on imports and strengthen domestic manufacturing. But some economists argue that tariffs diminish the economy's potential. Edmund Barisha is an associate professor of economics at Montclair State University in New Jersey.
in the long run, tariffs will produce more uncertainty. From the business point of view, no business owner wants to invest in a country that might face tariffs now or in the future.
On his first day in office, Trump said he was thinking about imposing a 25% tariff on goods from Mexico and Canada starting February 1st. This past weekend, he also threatened and then backed off from imposing similar tariffs on Colombia. Critics warned that such tariffs will have an immediate impact on American families and business owners. They say the cost of tariffs on everyday items like groceries, clothing, and coffee would get passed on to consumers.
We've been growing coffee in Colombia now for about 150 years, 160. We've had our farm and our family now for close to 80 years.
Jonathan Etreveri, owner of Paper Plane Coffee Company just outside of New York City, worries that if tariffs are imposed on Colombian goods, as Trump recently threatened, he will be forced to pass the higher costs on to customers.
Right now, we're actually in a bit of a coffee crisis where the price of commodity coffee is at the highest it's been in 50 years. So adding on top of that, a 25% potential tariff or even a 50% potential tariff will just exacerbate things.
Tariff advocates say it's not always the consumer who picks up the tab. James Galbraith is an American economist and a professor of government at the University of Texas at Austin.
That may well be the case, but not necessarily always. I have to ask how the foreign suppliers are going to react. And in some circumstances, they may react by cutting their profit margins and trying to maintain their market share.
As the threat of tariffs on Mexico and Canada looms, Americans are bracing for the possible impact on their jobs, businesses, and prices they pay. Johnny Fernandez, VOA News, New York.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
A daughter of former South African President Jacob Zuma was in court today after being charged with inciting violence during riots in 2021, in which about 350 people were killed. Prosecutors allege Duazila Zuma Sambudla, who serves in parliament, incited others to commit acts of violence in posts on social media in July 2021 when unrest broke out after her father was arrested for disobeying a court order to testify at a corruption inquiry. What began as anger over Zuma's jailing turned into rage over poverty and inequality, with damage estimated at nearly $3 billion. Jacob Zuma accompanied Zuma Sambudla to the court in Durban. She was released on a warning until another court appearance scheduled for March.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Pete Huntley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.